Every year, Mike and I do our lists of our top movies of the year. And as I was going through the releases this year, I realized what slim pickings it was, but half of that's on me. Mike was more adventurous with going and seeing movies that were unproven. I was kind of sticking to some of the classics. Now, I don't know if some of these movies made Mike's list, but more often than not, when I was going through this movie list, I go, oh, Mike went to that and Mike enjoyed that, or Mike went to that and hated that. And I saw that Mike had a lot more appetite for this, where I'm kind of getting fatigued, not by movies, but by Hollywood or whoever's making these things. It seems like it's just, here's a cash grab, we know this is bankable, and we're going to make it. And a lot of the audience has gone, well, are we safe with a superhero or a sequel or whatever else? I hope that 2025 says to Hollywood, look at some of these newer, original ideas, because they resonate with people rather than rehashing. When I looked at my list of movies I liked this year, it was slim pickings and very few rehashes. So actually, I skipped over a lot of the superhero stuff. I skipped over, like, Superman. I enjoyed Superman fine. I didn't want to put it on a list of must-see movies just because it's one of the few movies I saw this year. I actually thought it was a slimmer list than usual because there was so little I was even interested in seeing.
See, that's fascinating, Ari, because I hadn't thought about it from that perspective, but as I was going through my list, it looks like I've logged 28 movies this year between theatrical and streaming, and that's about average for me. Like, it's not necessarily higher or lower. It's kind of about the same. So do you think that you've watched fewer movies this year? Because, like, you watch a lot of movies you don't like, but is it, like, more or less? Where are you at for 2020?
I have definitely watched fewer, whereas when I was looking at making a top 10 list, I think there were 15 I had seen, where normally I go see a lot more of these things, and it was just like, nah, not really. It was just I wasn't so interested. And even when it hit streaming, I wasn't even so interested. I find myself revisiting the classics a lot. It takes a lot for me to go, I want to see something new. You really got to hook me. And I think that's an oversaturation of the marketplace, like we've discussed before. I find myself watching crap that came out in the 80s on Amazon. You know what I watched the other night? You're going to make fun of me. You know what I watched the other night? With Honors, with Joe Pesci and Brendan Fraser. Just because I go, I know what I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm not so ready to invest in something new. For example, I know that anytime Mark Wahlberg does something on streaming, I will love that stupid movie. There has been one Mark Wahlberg movie I didn't like, and that was actually Lone Survivor, which I thought didn't really go anywhere. And I know that's an unpopular take. I know it's based on a true story. I didn't find it as engaging as anybody else. I see why people did. That's my own nonsense. But anything that dude watches, makes, I will watch. So, going at the list, Mike, and these are a few movies that, in fact, this first one I got here is the most recent movie I saw, and I don't even think we did a movie review on it.
Is your list ranked, or are you just going to start throwing out titles?
I'm throwing out titles because I couldn't rank these. I just couldn't. I will mention the standout ones, okay? I will mention the standout ones, but here's one I did.
This is going to get real awkward because my list is very ranked and very curated, as it usually is.
My list, I tried to rank them, but I'm like, these three all tie. That's my issue, okay?
That's fair. That makes
sense. So, basically, one of the movies I just saw, Playdate. And I don't know if you saw this thing, but it's with our friend Jack Reacher, right? It's with.
Oh, yeah. Is that on Amazon or something?
It's streaming on Amazon right now. I looked at it, a stupid buddy comedy, a stupid movie with Kevin James. And I said, you've got Jack Reacher and you've got Kevin James, Alan Ritchson, you've got him. I said, this is going to be fun. This is going to be stupid. I got everything I put into it. I watched it on Thanksgiving with my family. We made pizza because we had Thanksgiving a night or two later. We made little turkey cookies and we enjoyed the play date. And I enjoyed that movie. Now, Mike, here's a movie I'm curious if it even made your list. Novocaine.
Yeah, that's number 12 on my list.
Perfect. So we're in the same area.
Yeah, I like it fine.
Right. I kind of rank them there is kind of a ranking, but sure. I didn't do it formally. Like, this is the garbage first, and then get to the better stuff.
Yeah, it's just on the other side for me, because I really enjoyed it when we saw it in the theater, and we saw it with a packed house, and it was a lot of fun, and people had, like, you know, jangly glass soda bottles and things like that. It was a really fun time at the movies, but it's been streaming on Paramount Plus for quite a while, and I haven't gone back to it. For a movie that I identified that I liked and actually ranked pretty high at the time. I was telling people, go check it out. It's original. You know, Jack Quaid's got the juice and all that, but it speaks volumes that I haven't been back to it.
I haven't been back to it either, and I've been doing the same thing you have, where I tell people, oh, you're going on a plane? Check this out. You're going to want to watch this movie. It's one of those. Now, there's a few other movies that fell in this category for me, which is lower end. And the other ones that fell in this category was A Working Man. And I know I didn't like it as much as you guys did, for example, but I like the Jason Statham. I like that you get what you put into it. You know what you're going to get out of the movie. I put that one there also.
Yeah, bottom third for me. I've really cooled on it. And I haven't watched it in its entirety on a rewatch, but I've once it started streaming on Amazon, I went into it and kind of clicked around a little bit. And I'm just like, oh, yeah. Okay.
Right. The Beekeeper, infinitely better on every single level, but I enjoyed it. So I wanted to give it an honorable mention, I guess you could say. Next, Happy Gilmore 2. Now, Happy Gilmore 2, for a sequel, shockingly good. For a 30-year later sequel, shockingly good. And I enjoyed the stupid. You know it's stupid. It's not the Torah, right? It's not Shakespeare. Give me the stupid, I'll take the stupid. And given that there have been so many cash grabs like Coming to America 2, which were dreadful, absolutely dreadful, the fact that they actually kind of nailed it with this, I thought was really fun. The last of my crappy lower-end movies, which are still fun for this year, is Heads of State. We enjoyed that dumb president movie. I don't know if it was because we had our friend Jeff Pogula from Northwest News Radio and you and all that. I like the stupid. Give me the stupid. I got what I wanted out of the dumb movie.
Conversely, I have revisited that. My wife and I watched it. In fact, we watched it over Thanksgiving, actually. Mm-hmm. Delightful.
Yeah, fun.
It's fun.
Fun, and I'm willing to give up my time for it. Now, here's another level, and this is the mid-level. Okay. These are the movies that I enjoyed that I thought were well done, and some of them are actually sequels. So here's the ones I really enjoyed. And I'm going to start with the one I enjoyed the most, The Naked Gun.
Mm-hmm.
The Naked Gun was funny. It was great. It's a different kind of humor, but still true to the original. I really liked The Naked Gun with Liam Neeson.
Number five on my list.
Number five.
Pretty high. Pretty high.
Okay.
It sticks with me.
So that's great. I liked it a lot, and the underwear is still sitting in my drawer, so I see it all the time. I'm constantly reminded of The Naked Gun.
Well, and I like what it does conceptually. It makes a statement that big studio, big box comedies are something that could be financially viable. The movie did pretty well at the theater. It's resonated with audiences. I usually don't go for comedy type of movies, but this was like the right thing at the right time. And yeah, I rank it very highly.
Excellent. Okay, here's another one, which I don't think I saw with you in theaters. I saw later, but I've rewatched it a few times since then. Ballerina. The more I watch it, the more I like it. I agree with you. There's too much John Wick in the movie, but I am shocked how much I enjoy that movie, and I have to eat a ton of crow on this because Mike's going to make fun of me. It was the, oh, I can't believe they're doing a spinoff. Oh, I want a spinoff with this lady. Oh, I don't want a spinoff with this lady. Me, mad. And then it ends up on my good list of the year. So Mike gets to make fun of me for that one.
Well, that's hilarious. Two, one, I'm glad that you've warmed up to it. Ironically enough, I've cooled on it because we kind of like switched places there on that. But yeah, no, I'm glad you dig it.
Okay. Now, here's another one that's at my lower end of this section. The new Superman movie. And the reason the new Superman movie is here is because it's a new take on Superman. And I admire the attempt. I liked the movie fine. I'm upset more people didn't go see it. And I think one of the reasons I gave this a little bit higher than I should have is because I'm mad at the conservative movement for slamming this movie. I think that hurt its box office with no good reason whatsoever. And I have mentioned it in any interview. I have mentioned my bot analogy, the monkey bot analogy. I've tried to help this movie in whatever way I can because I want more Superman movies. I want more of that. I know Supergirl's coming out soon. And you know what? The first of any movie is okay. Look at the first Christopher Reeve Superman. It was good, but number two is infinitely better. Don't get me started on three and four. Number two is amazing, but you need number one to get to number two. So the Superman movie I'm putting here, because I really want to help it as much as I can, even though it's not one of my favorite movies, but I think everybody should go see it. Okay. Now we're moving into my top movies of the year.
Oh, here we go. I'm excited.
And I'm curious how much of this lines up with yours.
Uh-huh.
Okay. The first one I got here is The Running Man. And
holy mackerel, that is a surprise and a half.
I figured it would be for
you. It's number nine on my list.
Number nine for
you. It barely made it.
I'm putting it up there because, once again, I like that you went back to the original source material. I like that you tried something new on this. And I like that it wasn't a reboot to be like Schwarzenegger. I bought the stupid short story and the book.
I was going to say, did you ever read the book?
I read the book because you told me it was, you know, it was. And I got to say, I admire the filmmaker's efforts in this. So for me, I want to encourage people who try something new, even though everybody thinks of it as a reboot. That's why I'm putting it up here. And I enjoyed it, and I watched it again recently, and I enjoyed it too. So it held up.
That's amazing. I have now lived long enough where Ari Hoffman ranks an Edgar Wright movie higher than I did. What kind of world are we in? Everything is upside down.
It's crazy stuff. Dogs and cats sleeping together. Okay, here's my next one. And I think some of these might line up with you. F1.
Mm-hmm.
I was lukewarm on F1 aside from seeing it in the IMAX. I thought a lot of the plot was tired. A lot of it was predictable, but it was really a well-made movie and fun. And I like well-made and fun. I still have my issues with parts of it, but I really enjoyed the IMAX experience of it. I'm not sure how many people are going to get that, but nowadays, watch it on your surround sound at home. Do not watch it on your phone. Do not watch it on a plane. Do not watch it on a laptop. Do not watch it on a desktop. This is a movie that was designed to be a film, and there's far too few of those anymore. So that's why I put F1 at that category.
I've watched that movie three times
already. Ah.
I like it quite a lot. It is very high on my list, and it's all the things that we talked about when we did our Real Deal review of it. It is it's not a sequel. It's not a reboot. It's not a prequel. It's a wholly new concept. Now, again, a race car movie being a new concept, I mean, I guess, but they haven't told this story with the official backing and blessing and branding of Formula One. Like, Formula One was really trying to like push this as like, we're really going to try to make F1 racing happen. So we're going to use this movie as kind of like an advertisement for it. And what do? We get the guy that directed Top Gun Maverick. Mm-hmm. And then, let's get Brad Pitt to star in it as well. By the way.
Yes.
It's an excellent sports movie. It's a great Brad Pitt movie. It's great all the way around. There's something for everybody. It's kind of corny, but I think that's better to its advantage rather than a disadvantage.
Yes, and I'll say something else. Days of Thunder does not hold up well years later. And I was actually doing some research on why. And I didn't realize it was during a writer's strike, and the thing wasn't done, and the thing wasn't finished, and the thing was a colossal mess, and now it makes so much more sense why it sucked. I mean, as a little kid going to see it at the Ziegfeld Theater in New York with the massive surround sound where they have the big Star Wars premieres, it was awesome, and I'm like, woohoo! But it does not hold up on a rewatch now. F1 will hold up on a rewatch down the road. It really will, and the special effects were really well done.
I can confirm, and it has. I've watched it on my television, and it plays just fine.
Excellent.
I've got a decent sound bar. It sounds pretty okay. So I've seen it in IMAX, I've seen it in a regular theater, and I've watched it on TV, and I've enjoyed it in all three expressions.
Okay. Now, my number two movie of the year, and the only reason it's number two is because it's a sequel. That's the only reason why. Mission Impossible Final Reckoning.
Sure.
I liked it. I thought it was great. I got my issues along the way, but Tom Cruise still has it. This movie franchise still has it. I kind of was like, are we really doing another one? But then I enjoyed it, and it kind of left me wanting another one, which is insane, given that these things first came out when I was, a freshman in high school or something? So Mission Impossible Final Reckoning, yeah, it's worth your time. And I would watch a spinoff with that submarine captain. If they give him his own movie, I would watch that.
Give the whole crew of the Ohio their own movie. Because, like, talk about, like just faces and vibes. You know, like, all the folks there are, like, you know, helping Tom Cruise along the way and, you know, like, try to recover from the bends and stuff. Like, everybody is, like, a character actor. It's like, what's their deal?
Yes.
What's their deal? That kind of thing. I completely agree with you on that. I ranked Final Wrecking just a hair under F1 for me. It's big, it's loud, it's dumb, it's a mess, but it's my mess.
Yes.
I am in the bag for these movies. Ari, as you know, I've been pretty evangelical about them. In fact, I've sold you on revisiting some of the lesser sequels. And it's like, don't sleep on that Fallout. It's secretly the best one. That kind of thing. So I have my issues with it as well. But at the end of the day, in terms of, like, top-tier spectacular filmmaking, nobody does it better than Tom Cruise.
Yep.
As a Tom Cruise movie at the height of his powers.
He may be a lunatic, but he makes amazing movies.
Absolutely.
And you know what? That's how you can separate the art from the artist. It still makes amazing movies. Okay.
I mean, like, I will never forget how I felt in the theater watching the submarine sequence the first time. And then you get the plane chase at the end, and you'll forget that entire sequence is about 40 minutes of just nonstop action.
And it's awesome.
It's incredible.
It's awesome. And just when you think, what could they do next? You know, Fast and Furious, like, what are they going to throw out of an airplane or a submarine? It's ridiculous. This still somehow manages to be awesome. Also, they listened to feedback on the last one, which I thought was good, and dumbed down the AI a little bit. Got rid of that as a main character, which was weird. Okay. My favorite movie of the year is Nuremberg. Now, here's a unique reason why it was good. First, let's start with the reasons why it was good, and then I'll give you the unique reason. Russell Crowe, incredible. Everybody in this movie is great, even Rami Malek, who I don't normally like except for Bohemian Rhapsody. Everybody's good in this movie. But you can tell, or rather I should say, you can't tell that this thing was done in a green screen. You know it was a green screen. You know they are not in Nazi Germany. Whatever production they did, with whatever items they did it with, or costuming, or whatever it was, shows you can make a good movie on budget that is designed for the big screen or the small screen. It can be done. You can make good streaming content that's also theater content. And the acting is awesome. I've got my issues with some of the plot points. I've got my issues with some of the angles. But this was, I don't know if there's a market for these anymore because you have to think and you have to be invested and it's long. But the production of this movie was so spectacular that I know I'm not looking at the stadium in Nazi Germany. I know those guys are standing in front of a green screen in Ukraine or wherever the hell they are. I thought they were in Nazi Germany. The production is spectacular. The acting is phenomenal. So that's why I give Nuremberg my number one. Mike, what's your list look like?
Well, I'm going to shout out a handful of movies that you didn't mention. I'm going to start at the bottom of my list and make my way up. Some of which we've kind of forgotten about. Some of which we wish we forgot about. Do you know they made a Star Trek movie last year?
Oh, you mean the Discovery Sector?
Section 31. That's a movie. It's a movie. Not a good one. You were talking about superhero sequels. Did you know that there was a Captain America movie?
Oh, I know there was, and that and the
not
Thunderbolts and everything else just got chucked by the wayside.
Not very good.
Yeah.
They had another Jurassic Park movie.
Yes.
Not
still
very
haven't
good.
Seen it.
Don't. As I said at the time during our review, that not even Scarlett Johansson's profoundly snug tank top can make you want to go see that movie.
Wait, sidebar.
Yes.
Sidebar. My sister-in-law loves the Jurassic Park movies.
Sure.
She has been ragging on me about having to see this movie like it is the greatest movie ever made. And I have said to her, if Mike says this movie sucks, I am not going to waste my time on this movie.
Yeah, there are parts of it that I kind of like. I like that it's kind of more of a monster movie than a dinosaur movie.
Yeah.
But then, spoiler alert, the Rancor monster shows up at the end from, like, Jabba's palace and stuff, and I just don't care. Like the performances aren't very good, and it's kind of a mess. So that's kind of like at the bottom of my list. But at the bottom of my list, Ari, and we couldn't get out of here without mentioning this, a little movie called Flight Risk.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all need a pilot?
Yeah.
Because I certainly don't.
Yeah, I now have to, now I see why you were giggling during my Mark Wahlberg thing. You may have found the other Mark Wahlberg movie that I was not big on.
Yep. Not a good movie.
Not a good movie at all.
But man, we did have we had a really fun time watching it.
Yes, we did.
So that's kind of some of the bottom of the dregs for me. Here's some of the stuff from the top half of my list that all movies Ari hasn't mentioned yet, and most of which I don't think he's seen. Number 10 on my list, Tron Ares.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Mr. KVI went to go see it in IMAX 3D. The movie is not particularly good, but it is a visual spectacle. The soundtrack is terrific, incredible. The director of Tron Legacy, Joseph Kaczynski, also director of F1 and Top Gun Maverick, said like, yeah, this isn't a sequel to my movie. It's a parallel story. And I'm like, yes, I know. Thank you for confirming the thing I know. Jared Leto is not the problem with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's some other issues. But there are some standout performances, but you're there for the vibe and visual aesthetic and the special effects and the soundtrack, and it delivers on all those. Is it something that I'm in a hurry to go rewatch? No, but I still think about it. Like, I occasionally play some of the music back as bumpers here on the radio show because that Nine Inch Nails soundtrack kind of still sticks in my head. So that gets a nod from me. Another movie that Ari didn't see, Predator Badlands,
mm-hmm.
the latest Predator movie. I have mixed to high feelings on it. If you would like to see the Predator take on a army of androids and exotic alien planet creatures, this movie is for you. Like, you know, Predator is generally a very R-rated franchise with, you know, people getting their skulls ripped out all Mortal Kombat style and all that. And Predator Badlands has that style of violence, but it kind of takes the Michael Bay Transformers approach to it. It's like if everybody is aliens and robots, then yeah, you could just chop people in half. And and like the kills are incredibly violent. It is an incredibly violent movie, but there isn't a single human person in it. It's all aliens and robots and stuff. But it's I had a really good time with it because it's kind of a slightly non-traditional telling of that story. Like, the Predator is usually the villain. He's the protagonist here. He's kind of like the runt of his tribe, and he's gone on this great hunt to have like a coming of age type of story. He meets a plucky, quirky girl robot on his way who becomes like his traveling companion. They have a requisite Disney-esque adorable creature that they befriend as well. And it's basically a story about kind of like, you know, family is it's a found family type of movie. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, you know, your clan, your tribe is who you meet along the way. The friends we made along the way type of way.
And you don't expect that from a Predator movie.
Yeah, it's like all the leads are very compelling. The guy who plays the titular Predator, he's a guy in a suit. The only computer graphics is on like the actual Predator face.
Sure. So it's not Jean-Claude Van Damme is what you're saying.
No, not this time. And ironically enough, since I had such a great time with Predator Badlands, it inspired me to go back to Hulu and watch a animated movie that came out earlier this year called Predator Killer of Killers. And it's an animated movie, very hard R, where like you can have people in there, human people getting dispatched in incredibly violent and gory ways. So it kind of delivers on that level in a way that Predator Badlands doesn't. But basically, it's like the thing we talked about after Prey came out a couple years ago. It's like, well, now if you have the Predator taking on Comanche Indians in like the 1700s, well, who else could the Predator fight? Well, like, what if the Predator came and fought a bunch of Vikings? What if the Predator landed in feudal Japan? What if the Predator decided to take on a squadron of World War ace pilots in the Pacific Theater in World War II. You get all of those stories as vignettes in this anthology, this Predator Killer of Killers thing. I recommend it. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. A couple more for you here. You mentioned the Superman, and I think this movie is on the other side of the same coin. I don't think you could talk about Superman without talking about the Fantastic Four : First Steps. I think both of those movies are of a kind and kind of putting Hope Corps kind of back in there, where, like, you know, there's a scene that really resonates with me that kind of became my mantra for a while, made it my personality, where Lois Lane and Superman are talking, Clark Kent, and they're talking about punk rock.
Yeah.
And basically, like, you know, Superman Clark Kent is kind of a doofus. He's corny, whereas Lois Lane is hard as nails, you know, yeah, from the streets and whatnot. And they talk about this notion of kindness. And basically, paraphrasing, says, like, you know, seeing the good in people, maybe that's the new punk rock, that kind of thing. And I feel like Fantastic Four First Steps kind of has the same type of thing, where it's got like the retro futurism vibe, and it's about optimism and more of a utopian type of society thing. Neither of these movies are glum. Grimdark kind of seems to be off the menu, at least for this year in superhero movies. And I thought it was kind of refreshing. It's not my favorite Marvel movie, but it was kind of like a whisper of a breath of fresh air, given the last drudge of other superhero fare that we've had. My last couple, so rounding out my top three, one of which you've already mentioned, we've already talked about F1, the movie.
Yep.
That was number three on my list. Both of my top two are neither of which are sequels, prequels, or reboots, and neither of which we've talked about. I understand why this one slipped off your radar, Ari, because we saw it so early in the year. My number two movie of the year is A24's Warfare.
See, I knew you were going to bring this up, and I knew you were going to mention it.
Well, thank you for giving me the space for that. It's like we've done pretty well in coordinating some of this.
I didn't know where to put this. I agree with you. Yeah. I didn't know where to put it.
Yeah.
I think my problem with it was the special effects and everything are incredible. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's a theater experience. We saw it in the IMAX. And my issue was the story.
Yeah.
It's
well, there is no story, ironically enough. It's just kind of like a slice of life of like what happens to this group of soldiers in Iraq, where they're basically they're looking for bad guys, maybe.
Right.
Bad guys kind of find them. Third build on the poster is that guy's blown off prosthetic leg. I mean, cause like that is on screen for the majority
of
the runtime.
It's got more to do than the leg in Guardians of the Galaxy.
There it is.
It's more of a plot point than that thing is.
But seriously though, I cannot remember the last time I was as profoundly moved by a movie, probably the Superman movie from last year, but that's a different thing. That's a documentary. This is not specifically a documentary. It is still the tagline is it's through the memories of the people who were there. So it is a true story, but it's not a documentary. But like we had the opportunity to host a screening of it that was attended by military veterans.
Yes.
And we had people saying things like they could smell the smoke,
mm-hmm,
and that it's the most realistic, visceral depiction of war that they had ever seen, because it's unglamorous.
Yeah.
There's a very unglamorous aspect to it that really resonated in a big bad way with me. So it is a movie, though, that I think you do need to experience theatrically. I haven't tried to watch it at home yet. Honestly, I don't know if it's streaming. I know it's on Blu-ray. You could buy physical copies of it. But I don't know. If I watched it at home, I don't think it would have nearly the same effect on me. The only thing I could think of is if perhaps I got like headphones or something like that. That level of immersion you kind of lose when you're at home, when you're able to pause it and take bathroom breaks and get snacks and things like that. Because it's kind of like the most intense episode of 24 in that, like, it's mostly in real time, like what happens to these guys just in sequence.
Yes.
It's very much a weird...
A very intense movie.
Yeah.
A very intense movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think I didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, really intense movie.
My number one movie is a movie that I talked about when you were gone one week, Ari. I don't remember if it was for holidays or vacations. But a movie that has stuck with me like no other this year. We had a conversation a couple few weeks ago where you're just like, well, yeah, you know, or they're movies that, you know, like you care about or anything that you go to bat about. And I just kind of rub the back of my neck kind of sheepishly. And I'm like, well, there is one movie that really sticks out to me. It's Ryan Coogler's Sinners. It stars Michael B. Jordan as in a dual role where basically it's two brothers looking to leave their troubled lives behind post World War One, I think. Yeah, because I think it's in the 30s. Mm-hmm. Anyway, there's twin brothers. Michael B. Jordan plays both brothers. He's both player one and player two. Literally, one has a red hat and the other one has a blue hat, so you can tell who is who. But he plays them as two completely unique characters, Smoke and Stack. And basically, they go back to Jim Crow era Mississippi Delta, and they're going to open up a juke joint for their community. And that's kind of what the movie is, how they interact with other people in the community. They pick up some people along the way, and it talks about, like, you know, the struggle of people living in Jim Crow Mississippi Delta, a lot of conversations about racism and cultural appropriation, and how two black men can make their way in this world. Oh, and by the way, that becomes a vampire movie.
I will say about this movie, Mike has mentioned this movie so many times.
Yeah.
I kind of had an internal bet with myself.
Yep.
Where this movie was going to rank, and I go, I bet you he ranks it number one. Yeah. When I passed it on the list, I go, Mike loves that movie. What's funny is the way I opened the segment, where I was talking about there's a whole bunch of movies you rolled the dice on and you really enjoyed that I didn't do.
Uh-huh.
This is what I was thinking about was this specific movie.
Yeah. Well, it's... I like Michael B. Jordan. I've been a fan of his since Friday Night Lights. I've been a fan of director Ryan Coogler. I like those Black Panther movies. And this not being a sequel or a reboot in any kind of way, it's a wholly original story. And the way that the music is told to tell a story, it's much a movie about the blues as it is about vampires.
Sure.
As it is about, you know, two gangsters trying to open up a juke joint and stuff. There's a lot of fusion of genres, but the cinematography is incredible. I had the opportunity to see it in IMAX, and there's one of the stars of the show is the aspect ratio changes, and it changes a couple times during the movies at very specific points of emphasis where the frame just blasts open and opens up. It's like, oh, it's getting real now. But some of it is for spectacle purposes, but there's just as many instances where there's just entire scenes of just rolling cotton fields and like just the landscape and cinematography. It's a beautifully shot and filmed movie. Brilliantly performed. All of the performances are incredible. A special Michael B. Jordan. I think they should give him two Oscar nominations, one for each role. But yeah, this is a movie that I have stood pretty tall about yelling from the mountaintops. And I've heard some folks say, like, well, I don't like vampire movies. I'm like, cool. Well then go there for like the themes of like racism and community and stuff. And how about the music and all of that other stuff? There's stuff there that's not vampire stuff, but it also doesn't skimp on the gore. Also, it becomes very much a vampire horror movie by the time the third reel rolls.
Mike, I knew you were going to pick that one. I'm happy you did. Otherwise, I would have lost a bet to myself.
Yes.
But really, as always, I say, Mike, I think, had the right idea towards movies this year, which is roll the dice on a few of these. You'll be surprised. And I noticed that a lot of the ones Mike pointed out was the original factor of them. What do you guys think of our list? Drop me an email, arikvi.com, or email mike@kvi.com, so that way you can weigh in on what you think and what movies you think we may have missed. We got a whole lot more to discuss as the show continues. You're listening to The Ari Hoffman Show on Talk Radio 570 KVI.